I grew pretty well throughout the summer, but as that was going on, I was starting to feel like I was just creating it because I felt like I had to, content that is, and poetry, and less because I actually wanted to. So I really like drew back and kind of was like, okay, let me kind of reinstate my original love for poetry before I start going back on Instagram.
Hey friends, welcome to another podcast episode. I'm super excited to share this one with you guys. If you'll remember, a few months ago I interviewed my friend Joshua DeShutter about his poetry stuff. And this is kind of a follow-up on that in sort of what happened over the summer. To make a long story short, he started a poetry account, started sharing his poetry publicly, and instantly picked up a lot of kind of attention online. And he's had some fun experiences since then. So on today's episode, we're gonna kind of share some of that with you guys. So if you haven't already, go listen to the first episode with Joshua DeShutter, Culture of Poets. That's kind of his tagline for making poetry like beautiful and more accessible to everyone. That's kind of the goal, but he'll get into more of that in the episodes. But go listen to the first podcast with Joshua and then come back and listen to this one, or just listen to this one.
Well, so we kind of have your background a little bit in the first
Yes,
episode.
correct.
So let's start off. First I'll just reference everybody. This is Joshua DeShutter. I interviewed him a few months ago when he started sharing his poetry online and gained a lot of attention very quickly, which was super exciting for all of us to see. Josh, tell us about, since we last talked, maybe what would that have been? Like 2, 3 months ago?
Yeah, I think like it was
What?
April or May.
Yeah, okay. So now we're beginning of September. Over the summer, what has changed?
Okay, yeah, good question. So it's so funny when I think back on like the first time I talked to you and like when I listen to it, I'm like, wow, I really knew nothing. Like it's so interesting, like as this progresses, like in all the different categories of like social media or like the actual art form of poetry itself. It's so interesting as you develop, you look back and you're like, even over the course of, like you said, like 2, 3 months, you look back and you're like, wow, I was like a complete novice. Even though I had a lot to say back then. So over the summer, it's been a wild ride. So I think when I first talked to you, I was at like about 90,000, about to hit 100. Now, today, I have 415,000 followers. And with that being said, I grew pretty well throughout the summer. But as that was going on, I was starting to feel like I was just creating it because I felt like I had to, content that is, and poetry, and less because I actually wanted to. So I really like drew back and kind of was like, okay, let me kind of reinstate my original love for poetry before I start going back on Instagram. So I think in July I only posted two videos and I didn't post anything in August, maybe once in the beginning of August, I don't remember. But I took like a solid whole month of like just absency, which was really good for me. And during that time I was still writing, I just wasn't putting it online. And now I'm just coming out of that now, getting back into posting regularly, once a week. And so yeah, that's kind of where I've been in my creative journey, this discovering like this need for like external validation, through putting it on Instagram, or just people in general can sometimes kind of hinder your original desire for the art form, if that makes sense. That was probably the biggest thing I learned. And also it's okay to take a break. Like it's totally okay to take a break. That's another thing I learned. Like I thought like, I'd lose everything if, I took a week off or something. But no, it's totally fine. Like you gotta prioritize your original desire to create the art or else no one will, fall in love with it like you do.
Right. I think we see that pretty frequently with different types of artists where they blew up at the beginning because it was so genuine and they were just doing it because they loved it. And then once they gain this big following, this notoriety, then they start trying to fit into boxes. Oh, this is the proven way. This is how it, you know, this is how to
Yeah,
grow. Or maybe they
exactly.
sign on with a big record label or some
Yeah,
marketing agency, and then they have to fit those boxes.
Exactly. Yeah.
Also, just going back to what you were saying, it's funny, looking back, even just a few months ago, on what you were saying and like how little you knew at the time. It's going to be hilarious to look back in 5 more years or one more
Yes.
year. Like, it just keeps on going like that, doesn't it?
I know, yeah. That's the plan, hopefully. So we'll see.
Yeah, totally. So how has it been trying to get back into that flow of just doing it for what you love instead of making it into a job?
It's interesting. It's really interesting because I can feel like the actual, like poetry, like any art form, is kind of a skill. And you can see, like, my early poems are kind of, I'm going to be honest, like they're a little weak, and I can feel that getting stronger. Like I said, I'm just so last week it was my first post in a month, and then hopefully today or tomorrow will be my next one. So it's difficult getting back into it, if I'm being honest with you. Just because it is a lot of work, to be honest with you. And then plus working, full-time job on top of that, and trying to fight that battle of not rushing through the process. Like it's this balance of like, okay, to get back into it, I need to set deadlines. But what if I work really hard and I'm not going to meet the deadline? Do I post a video anyways with it kind of being half-hearted done, or do I like just take an extra day or two? It's like just all these little debates in my head. I'm a bit of an overthinker, with that being said too. But yeah, no, I'm having fun with it. I'm definitely enjoying it a lot more than I was like early summer when I was just like trying to push out content for the sake of doing it,
Yeah, cool. That's good to hear. And like you mentioned, you are working a full-time job. People may not understand or may not realize that even though you have almost 500,000 followers, it doesn't mean you're just walking around going to parties all day, right?
Oh, no, not at all. Yeah.
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 So you recently had a couple of exciting kind of shows or I don't know, you were able to read your poetry a little bit in public. How can you tell me about those? Just tell those stories.
Yeah, no, for sure. So it's quite interesting. It's an amazing story. I love this story. So I was just at home in London, and I was getting ready for a trip to Halifax. I was going to Halifax for a family reunion, and I got a message from Dermot Kennedy, who is a very well-known artist in the music scene, of whom I was a fan of. And he just asked, "Hey, I love your work. Where are you from?" Now usually I just say I'm from London, Ontario. For whatever reason, like I decided that I'm from Nashville originally. For whatever reason, I decided to say I'm from Nashville. But I live in London. And said, "Oh, Nashville, no way. I'm here in Nashville now. I'm doing a show at the Bluebird Cafe, which is like a very iconic venue in Nashville." And he said, "If you can get there by the 13th, I would love to have you be a part of it, work your way into it." And of course I said yes. So he put me in touch with his manager to work out like all the details and stuff. And then I flew in on the 12th. And then it's quite an interesting story. Dermot, who is such a nice guy, and total thanks to him for even giving me this opportunity, because I absolutely loved it. He messaged me. So I arrive in Nashville, and it's the 13th, the day of the performance, and we just have a rehearsal to do. So he messages me to go to his buddy Gabe's house for the rehearsal. And when I get there, it turns out it's Gabe Simon, who is like Noah Kahan's producer. And so now I'm like really freaking out, because I'm like in like Noah Kahan's producer's like house slash studio situation with Dermot Kennedy doing a rehearsal for a show at the Bluebird Cafe, which was just like amazing. Like it's such a cool thing. Oh, and I forgot to mention, on the plane to Nashville, I bumped into Theo Vaughn in the airport, and Theo was on the plane in the seat behind me. And so I got to connect with him. And then I asked Theo if he had heard of Dermot Kennedy, and he said he was going to be at his show. And so I'm like, "Hey man, I'll see you there." So already, like, I'm freaking out. Like, I just met Theo. Dermot Kennedy invited me to do a show. Theo Vaughn, I ran into in the airport, and now I'm in, Gabe Simon's recording studio. Or like, I don't know. it's not really a recording studio. It's more like it is a little bit. It's more like a creative studio, I would say. And so, anyways, from there, then we do the show. It's absolutely amazing. Huge thanks to, like I said, Dermot and his whole team for the opportunity, and the Bluebird Cafe as well. It was just such a fun time, such a creative time. And it was nice because, you know, Dermot does a lot of big shows, but this was like a really smaller, like more intimate one, which gave him more creative liberty, like for even inviting me, right? Because if you go to a Dermot Kennedy concert, you know, you kind of expect a certain thing, and he kind of feels like he has to deliver that. But if he hosts like a small, like, you know, 90 person, you know, concert, he has like full creative liberty. And he really enjoyed the show. I really enjoyed the show. Theo Von was there in the front row. He enjoyed the show. And so yeah, it was just a great time. And then I got to go back to the green room afterwards and meet all of his friends. Dermot obviously has a lot of friends in the music industry in Nashville, and they were all pulled into the green room after the show. And so yeah, I got to meet them as well, and then said my goodbyes, and then flew back out to Halifax, and then I had to, and then just late August, then I flew into New York because I had a creator event in New York, which is also a great opportunity. Like, this was more for like the Instagram side, so there's like a lot of, you know, obviously influencers and creatives on Instagram, and they were all kind of getting together in New York, and so I flew out there. So that was kind of like my month of August. The highlight definitely being the show with Dermot Kennedy. Yeah, it was an absolute blast.
That's amazing. So, like, were you expecting to be doing this kind of thing in your first year of posting poetry?
No, I wasn't expecting anything. It's so funny because when I started, I might have told this story, but I was kind of looking through different poets on Instagram, seeing what they kind of did, feeling it out, you know, and I came across like this, like absolutely really small creator. And I saw her post, and her post was, oh my goodness, guys, it's been a whole year since I started posting. Thank you so much for 2,500 followers. And so that's kind of my headspace going into it. Like, hey, I might get to, you know, 2,500, much less almost, I mean, I've been doing it about half a year. So almost 500,000 followers, and then doing live shows with like very well-known people in the music industry. That is not something I had all anticipated.
Yeah, that's incredible. Can you tell me about the show with Dermot? How did it actually play out? Like, what you were reading your poetry, I'm assuming, and had you ever done a poetry reading before?
Yes, not like kind of a lot smaller, how about that?
Sure.
And definitely this was definitely a different vibe completely, because it was actually really, it was such a cool process, like the whole thing. So okay, so flashback me when I'm still in London, I asked Dermot, hey, like whenever you get a chance, send me a set list so I can kind of orchestrate my poems around kind of the songs. Now obviously Dermot's a very busy guy, and he's a very creative guy, and one thing I learned is these creatives don't really, they plan as little as possible, so they have as much freedom when it's time. So with that being said, I didn't end up getting the set list until the rehearsal, essentially.
Okay, nice.
And so I show up, and he's like, okay, Josh, what are you going to do? And I said, oh, I'm just going to read my poems. He didn't even ask what poems. He didn't ask anything. He's like, okay, do your thing. We didn't even rehearse the poetry. He had no idea what I was going to, like, he, this guy, man, he put a lot of, looking back on it, man, he put a lot of trust in that, you know, I would show up and perform, which
Yeah,
is
big time.
hilarious.
I mean, even just the fact that, you know, you wouldn't be shy in front of a
Wait on, I
crowd or
will
something
perform.
like that, right? Oh, sorry, it was breaking
Say
up a
again,
little
sorry.
bit.
Oh
Yeah.
no, yeah. What did you say?
Even just the fact that he was willing to put you on his show, not knowing if you'd freeze up in front of a crowd or, you know, that's huge. That's amazing.
Oh, like this guy had an insight into me. It was, I wouldn't even invest that much confidence into me, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
And so I get to the rehearsal, and I have a list of four poems that I've memorized to perform. And I'm like, so how are we going to do this? And he has this idea where, like, he'll play a song. So he's going to play, I think it was around like a set of like 20 songs or so. And every four songs, I would do poetry. Does that make sense? So
Yeah.
I did four poems. And what he decided was he would song and then extend the outro of the song, and I would recite my poetry over the outro. that make sense?
Oh, so there's kind of like some
Yeah.
peaceful music in the background
Yeah,
while
yeah,
you're.
yeah, yeah. Yeah, so it's not just like dead silent, which was a genius move. But with that being said, the poems that I had selected did not match, because I didn't have a set list, did not match the songs that he was going to do, right? And
Right.
one thing about the whole show is, for one, I wanted to, like, it's obviously Dermot's show. Like, I didn't want to forget that. It's obviously, so I wanted everything I did to kind of frame him as an artist, because this was very big for him as well. Because he it was his first performance in a while. It was a smaller crowd, you know, it was something he was really looking forward to. So I didn't want to take anything away from that. And what happened was the songs that he picked didn't match the poems that I picked. But he, so we do our rehearsal and I go home and I'm freaking out. I'm like, what am I going to do? So I'm like, okay. Like, he gave me the songs that he's going to do. So I'm going to have to write some poetry like around the themes of the songs. And so in the course of like 2 hours, I ended up writing like all new material for the show, which I was completely like freaking out about. That was a whole nother thing, because like I get done, it's a total God story, to be honest with you, because I get done, I'm freaking out, I'm like, well, what am I gonna do? You know, I'm overtired, I'm jet lagging, the show is in, you know, 4 hours. So I go home and I take a 30-minute power nap, I wake up and then I write, you know, all new material. And it's so interesting. I'm so glad that Dermot, he never once said, you know, where are the poems? Can I proofread them or anything? Never once. And I didn't even tell him that I wrote the new material, either. So anyways, yeah. So, but the show itself, it went really well. So we get to the venue, there's a huge line outside because they're selling some tickets at the box office. You go in, everyone, all the staff are very nice people. We do the sound check, then we go to the green room. Everyone fills in. Dermot comes out, introduces myself, and then Gabe Simons is accompanying him on guitar across from me. So the setup is I'm sitting to the left of Dermot, and Gabe is to the right of Dermot. And then Dermot would play his songs. I would read my poetry over the outro, and there was enough time for like a little bit of like conversation in between sets. Where Dermot would either, you know, be talking to myself or Gabe or the audience. It felt really natural and it felt like really intimate. It was a really good show. Yeah.
Cool. That sounds amazing. That's something that most people won't, you know, with only 90 seats or something, most
Yeah.
people won't get a shot at that kind of show, right?
Oh yeah. Like in my head, like I'm like worst case scenario, I have like the best seat in the house to like a private Dermot Kennedy concert, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Cool.
But yeah.
That's amazing. That sounds like a once in a lifetime opportunity, except that I'm guessing there will be more of that kind of stuff coming your way.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Cool. Did you afterwards, were you like walking around talking to people, or you said you went into the green room? Any
Yeah.
cool interactions when you were in there?
Oh, definitely. Like I said, like all of his friends are somehow in the music industry, at different levels as well. So, and also Theo Vaughn came back to the green room. So I got to talk to Theo for a good while and meet his, you know, wife and Dermot's wife and all of, like I said, Dermot's friends. This one guy I talked to for a while, he's from Nashville. He's about to headline Europe, because he does music. And they're all super nice. Like every single one of them said, hey, if you're ever back in Nashville, let me know. I'd love to meet up with you. Like they're all, every single one of them are super, super hospitable, super kind. Yeah, no, yeah. It was a fun time.
Cool. Does it make you want to host your own type of event like that?
Yeah, no, definitely. And that's something I'm working on and planning towards. It's funny, Dorian, I have so many ideas and so many plans. It's just a matter of finding the resources and the time to implement them, if that makes sense.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I totally get you.
Yeah, but no, I would love to host, you know, something that kind of what he did, invite some other creators to, you know, join in, if you will. Yeah, definitely.
Cool. So then that you said that was the highlight of your summer. What about this other creator event? How did that go? What was that like?
Oh, it was great. It was so this one was a little different. This one was like I said, there's like a good community of creators, mostly in like the video. So Instagram has like, I think I explained this before, kind of different like niches, obviously, like your photography, your video, your music, your poetry, and different creators like overlap in different ways. And it's actually a very tight community too. Like they all like kind of know each other. It's actually really cool. So there's a group of them kind of in the video storytelling kind of demographic that were hosting events in New York. They had done it before. It's actually really cool. It's called Story Jam, and you just kind of get a bunch of creators together and they, you know, make stories, tell stories. It's a really cool concept. So they did it before, but I wasn't able to go. So they're hosting again in New York, and I've always wanted to go to New York. So I took 3 days off and went to New York. The event itself was amazing. I got to meet a bunch of really cool people. And then even almost just as cool was the actual city of New York. Absolutely loved it. I had such a good time there.
That's awesome. Yeah, I've never been to New York, but
Oh
one
yeah.
day.
No, you have to go. It's and you lived in Vancouver for a bit, right?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. It's like it would be that on super steroids, man. Like
Nice.
it is a big city. You don't even realize how big it is till you get there. And there's so much history. 18.9 million people.
Wow.
18.9 million people in New York City.
That's nearly half of Canada's population.
I know. Plus, once you add in all the tourists, like
Wow.
it's insane.
Yeah, that's crazy. Cool. So what's next on the horizon for you?
Good question. So right now I'm continuing to work on putting together like a collection of poems for a book. I'm hoping to get that published. And so that's the main task I'm working on, as well as consistently getting back into posting, continuing to grow my audience, see where it goes. I have a few different plans coming up. I want to from the beginning I've always wanted to cultivate kind of like I said, like a culture of poets. So trying to find activities and events and programs to kind of get my audience a little more involved is something that I've been planning out. So that's kind of what I have going on moving forward.
Cool. Has your process changed at all since you started for writing poems, being inspired to write? You shared how you wrote a whole set of poems in a couple hours the day of your show. But like other than that, has your day-to-day process changed? Have you been inspired by different stuff recently or different
Yeah,
music,
no,
that kind of
definitely.
stuff?
I've definitely one thing that I've done is I have started reading more poetry. That's one thing that's just essential. And it's fascinating as and not only reading more poetry, but learning about like the different poets and their lives. And it's interesting because like a lot of them obviously weren't famous until they died. That's kind of like a trait of any early artist in, you know, the 1900s or the 1800s. But also like how much time they took to like Robert Frost, which we all know, like he didn't publish his book till he was 40. Like he published his first poem in a newspaper when he was I think 16, 17, but he never published a book until like 20 years later, which is insane. So like just kind of learning like about their lives and their art form, as well as I have, it's funny, I have this giant book now, a poet's glossary, and it has like, oh man, this is like, man, if you thought poetry was like simple and just words, man, just dive into this. Like it talks about every different type of poem, rhyming, meter, like, oh, it's insane. It's a tough read. But different things like that, more so like educating myself on the history behind poetry and the art form itself, in order to kind of like level up from where I am now.
That's awesome. That's super cool. So is that book, that glossary for poets, is that like a reference, or is it a, are you reading through it?
It's more of like a reference, but it can also be read through. It's the same author who wrote, he was a poet himself, Edward Hirsch, but he also wrote a book called Falling in Love with Poetry, which was also a good one. But Yeah, you can read it through, but it's really kind of like an encyclopedia. It would be like if you read an encyclopedia through. You can do it, you'll learn a lot. It's not like a consecutive story though.
Right. Okay. Cool. Would you recommend picking that book up if someone's an aspiring poet?
Definitely. I would say that wouldn't be my first go-to though, because it's just super overwhelming. I would much prefer like picking up like a lot of publishers have like a nice collection of poems, like get like a poetry book first, definitely. And then because in a poetry book, so I started with a poetry book and I read through it and then I picked out all the different poems I liked and then the authors of those poems. And then I bought their books and then read all their poems specifically. And then from there I got this to figure out kind of how they do it. This would be like it would be a little overwhelming if you're like just new to the game. Honestly, like I said, the best strategy still, if you're just new, is like get a poetry book, read poetry, and then write. Read and write, read and write, and then go from there.
Yeah, I've always heard people say in different contexts, but I'm sure it applies to poetry, good writers are good readers.
Yes.
And sounds like exactly what you're talking about.
Oh, definitely. Oh, 100%. Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Would you say you're more inspired by like current poets or stuff from the past, like you're talking about?
Both, definitely both. It's interesting. Modern poets are very more niche, whereas poets from before are kind of more general. So I would say both. There are more poets from the past, though, than there are like kind of relevant poets from today. So there's more to pick from.
Right.
So I think at the end of the day, I'd probably go from the past. And a lot of modern poetry is interesting. Like a lot of it's changed so much. And like I said, there's different niches where, so you got like Billy Collins, who's like one of the most well-known modern poets. And if you read his poetry, it kind of reads as like a short essay. It's just him kind of describing something or kind of drawing a parallel. It would be very similar to an essay. It's not like it super rhymes or there's any kind of meter. There's a little bit of rhythm in there. It just kind of reads like an essay. Whereas you look at like Rupi Kaur, she's kind of the queen of like one-liners kind of things, so, like four lines of poem. Whereas you look at Amanda, who's the poet laureate for the United States, she's actually the one I kind of like the most. Her poetry is kind of like longer and a kind of mix of the both. And those are kind of the big three players, if I'm being honest. But with that being said, each one of those, my point is like each one of those are very niche and they're kind of all their own thing. Whereas you look at Robert Frost, he did both. He did essays, he did poetry, he did, short form, long form, rhyming, no rhyming, meter, no meter. Like, so yeah. People
Can
have kind
you?
of like zeroed in on their different niches.
Yeah, that totally makes sense. It's funny the you mentioned all the old timers. They kind of got famous after they died, which seems like back in the day, it just took so much longer for word of mouth or whatever to share these things around. And by the time you got famous, you were probably dead, which is sad. But
Yeah.
now we have so many more avenues where you have 450,000 people or 415 whatever thousand people who are watching your stuff, and you've only been posting it for around 6 months ish. So
Yeah.
very, very cool how much stuff has changed, eh?
Oh yeah. No, definitely. Also, like back then, like you had to work to survive. Like, man, imagine growing up in the 1800s as someone who I would consider myself as like kind of middle class. Like back then, I wouldn't even have time to write. So the consumerism has, obviously gone up as we've created all these inventions that kind of save time. So that's another aspect of it, because who's going to read Walt Whitman, in 1850 if, it's either read that book or starve to death,
Yeah, right. Totally. Can you tell me some of the I heard you bring up the word meter. Are there some words that like someone who doesn't know poetry, they might not know what that means. Can you jump into a little bit of that
Oh,
stuff, some of the terminology?
So it's kind of like, it's interesting when you look into it. It's kind of like how you have music theory, you equally have poetry theory. And so meter is kind of the enunciation, the rhythm of the poem, right? So you have the rhyme, which is the actual rhyming of the words, but the meter is the like how the words bounce in rhythm,
Is it
if that kind of makes sense.
almost like a time signature on music?
Yeah, kind of. I'm trying to think of an example here. So like if I said this and that dog and cat, okay, random example, this and that dog and cat. So the meter would be this and that dog and cat. And that's kind of like there's a name for that rhythm pattern, and then there are different ones you can choose for different poems, et cetera. It's exactly pretty much like kind of the time signature. Yeah.
Okay, cool. Are there any other like little words that you've learned or little pieces of terminology that you didn't know before now?
Oh, definitely. Oh, a ton. I have them all written down somewhere. My memory isn't as good as it used to be. But yeah, definitely. I'll pull them up and I'll send them to you, and you can probably put them in the description of this. Cause
Cool.
just because I don't remember them off the top of my head. But yeah, there's a couple of them.
That's awesome. And I'm sure that stuff could be found online and
Oh yeah. It's like I said, it's just like how music theory has, time signature, half notes, quarter notes. It's the same thing, but for poetry.
yeah, cool. That's awesome. Sweet. Well, drawing a blank here. Is there anything else you want to throw in there? Anything you think people should know? People have been watching you just exploding.
I think that's pretty much it. I would just, again, I even said this last time, like encourage people to like go out and, try something. And don't get upset if you don't get the immediate results you want. Like, so for example, I set a goal this year that I wanted, at least one of my poetry works published in like either like a small newspaper or small, poetry magazine or something, whatever. And that was my goal, like just something small. So like I said, I reached out to a bunch of like really small, like not even big, organizations, small ones, the ones that are for the little guys like me.
Yeah.
And they all like got rejected. And then from there I went on to Instagram, and my first four videos didn't do well at all. And then finally I think it was my fifth video did big, which kind of sent the other videos. It's interesting, when one video goes off, people go back and watch your other ones, right? And so it kind of sent them all up. But so my message to like specifically creators and stuff is get out there, create stuff, put it out there, but also don't get discouraged if you don't like see immediate results, because 9 times out of 10 you're not going to see that. And I can't imagine where I would be now if I didn't post my fifth video. Like
Yeah.
I wouldn't have been in Nashville. I wouldn't have been in New York. I wouldn't be having like all these plans and collaborations going on with all these different creators, So it's literally like every time you put something out there, it's like a lottery ticket, and you can put out as many as you want. And sometime you'll, hit the jackpot.
Yeah, so probably a big thing is being consistent at doing what you love, right? Just
Yes.
pushing out the things you love, not like you were saying at the beginning too, not trying to just fit into the box, like, oh, these are the steps to getting famous.
Yeah.
Just what you did, you didn't follow any of the rules. You just started throwing
Yeah.
stuff out there that you love,
Exactly.
right?
Oh, yeah, and don't worry about trying to be the best right out of the gate. Like I said, my first video was literally me standing in the woods with, just my phone selfie camera. Not even my good camera, like on the back of the phone, like my selfie camera, and me just like reciting poetry. Like the music cuts halfway because I couldn't get the royalty or something. Like it was weird. Like it's just weird. Like, and that video went to like 10 million. So like video quality and like all this, making sure everything's 100% perfect. Like you're just wasting time. Like just get out there and start putting stuff out there.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, that's sweet. Do you feel like a different person now that you're famous?
No, I'm not anywhere near famous enough to feel different. It you definitely have some cool encounters, like some every once in a while, like someone will recognize you. And so that's always fun. But I feel like I do a pretty good job of not letting it get to my head. At the end of the day, like comparatively, I'm still really super small. So I just got to keep going at what I love and, you know, stay true to who I am.
Right. And so the goal may not even be to try and get to 1 million followers or try and get
Yeah.
bigger. The goal, it sounds like from talking to you, is to stay authentic and true to what
Yeah.
you.
Yeah. Because at the end of the day, if you really like, I've had poems where I have posted them for the algorithm and I wasn't super into them. Like, I didn't super like them. And then when they perform badly, I'm like, man, like, am I even good at anything kind of thing? If they perform good, then it, you know, validates who I am. Whereas I have posted poems that I truly, truly, truly like, wow, this is good. Like, I love this. And if it performs badly, then I'm fine. Like, I'm literally, it doesn't faze me because I know that that poem was as good as it could have come from me. And I'm personally proud of that. And that's another really important thing because I've had an instance where I wrote a poem that I thought wouldn't perform well at all on the algorithm. Like, I thought, man, I'll post it's it was long, it was like black and white. I wanted it to be black and white. It was a long poem, and I'm like, man, if I post this, like, it's not gonna do well. Maybe I should just not post it. But then I'm like, no, because I really, really enjoy this, and I want my audience to see what I enjoy. And so I put it out there, and it ended up doing really well. And so you only handicap yourself if you put this filter of do I of when you put this filter of, you know, I'm 100% reliant on their validation, because you'll actually limit the actual art that you want to create in the first place.
Right.
And a good way, and another quote that's coming to mind now, I don't know who said this, but essentially what they said is another thing that's kind of related is if you live for their praise, then you die in their criticism. And so if all of your validation for your art comes from a source that could change or could have a different opinion, then once you switch up a bit, then and everyone, if people, heaven forbid, kind of turn against you, then you'll stop creating completely, because if you live for their praise, then you die in their criticism.
That's beautiful. I love that.
Yeah.
It's
So that would be,
such a
go
great
ahead.
way to describe it. Like, it goes exactly with what you're saying, where when you love what you're putting out, you don't care if people like and subscribe and comment and whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because you just know this is totally my authentic, this is my art and I love
Yeah.
it. I'm putting it up there just because.
Yeah.
And if you like
Yeah.
it,
Yeah.
great. If not, I like it.
Yeah. And another, and I'll keep going here for a second, Dorian. Another message, because when you're in that environment in Nashville, like, it's such an environment of like success, you know, because everyone in that green room has done something in the creative arts successfully. And success is, you know, subjective, but, you know, I would say they were all objectively successful. And it's so, and until I felt that in that room, I'm like, man, it is impossible to make a living on art or kind of like pursue it as a career, or, you know, so many, specifically in musicians, because music is set is one of those ones that's like super saturated, if I'm being honest with you. And so it's very discouraging for like young musicians to, you know, get out there and even start. Like, I have this one guy at work who's a very talented musician. Like, he went to school for it, but he's like, man, it's just like, I feel so depressing at times, you know, like putting stuff out there, no one sees it. And with that being said, like, if anything, I hope that I'm a message that kind of like, you can do this. Like, I haven't even made it there 100%, but I'm kind of on my way and I'm staying focused on that. And so to anyone out there, you know, who's trying to pursue the creative arts, just remember it's never too late. And it's actually possible. If you work for it hard enough, at some point, it might take 1 year, 2 years, 3, 5 years. You know, for example, like, we all know, you know, Zach Bryan.
Oh yeah.
He spent 9 years in the Navy just playing guitar. Like, he was 9 years in the Navy. He writes an album in a motel room in Jackson, Florida, and it ends up being super big. But no one pays attention to like the 9 years of just like of what felt like nothing, no movement, you know?
Right. Right.
Yeah. Like they say, it takes 10 years to create an overnight success. I'm just kind of ranting on now, but kind of my message is, look, get out there and like create stuff because the world needs more beauty in it.
I love that. Yeah, I'm always super inspired by stories like that. Like the little guy, you don't hear the backstory though. Like
Yeah.
you don't hear about the 9 years in the Navy or the, you know, like yeah, that's the part you don't see. And I love what you said, it takes 10 years to create an overnight success. That sounds pretty accurate, but we don't really see that on the outside. We just see
No.
the explosion, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. Well, I'm super inspired by everything you're doing, Josh.
I
Thanks for
appreciate
coming
it.
on the podcast again.
Yeah, no problem. Anytime, man.
Thanks again for checking out the Main Character Podcast. I have been your host, Dorian Loveday. I've been chatting with Josh DeShutter, super cool guy. Go follow him, go check him out. He's always got lots of interesting projects on the go. And yeah, if you are watching this, you'll notice my hair is coming back a little bit, which is exciting. But yeah, thanks for checking out the podcast, and we'll have more fun stuff coming for you soon. All right, bye-bye. Until the next one, peace and love.